Well, I'm offended for all those little girls who didn't have a choice.
Oh!
Yeah, I about... What'd you say, Willis? Yeah. She actually said, I'm offended for all the little girls who didn't have a choice. If anybody in the liberal, progressive messaging universe has even the tiniest lick of sense, that will be on PSAs all over America in defense of a woman's right to choose. Michelle Bachmann. I'm just offended for all those little girls who didn't have a choice. But as I said, more on that later. As you know, the September 11th anniversary has come and gone, and probably enough has been said about it. But I sat just sort of simmering away on Sunday, and I'm not going to let it go by without just a couple of remarks. And without a note from our pal John in New York, Dr. John, that is. I wasn't thinking, to be honest. I wasn't thinking when I got up on Sunday morning and turned on the television. Or actually, I was thinking. And what I was thinking was I wanted to go and watch me some NFL pregame. I'm shallow that way. I do have to escape a little bit now and then. And college and NFL football do it for me in the fall. Around March, it'll be March Madness. Yeah. Much more of a college guy than professional, but yeah, on Sundays, you know, absent of religion, Sundays are for NFL. But in the commercials, like a dummy, I went scanning around and I landed on ABC, where they were having a solemn memorial for the the 10th anniversary of September 11th, 2001. It was curiously found wanting, ABC's memorial was, of a single image of George Bush sitting there with that bemused, sort of half-sedated look on his face and my pet goat turned upside down in his lap. Those moments, that half an hour in that elementary school in Florida, it wasn't there. And it was pretty depressing because it was largely an exercise in absolutely not having any interest whatsoever, even 10 years later, in understanding why September 11th, 2001 happened. A lot of minor key music on ABC. Diane Sawyer and George Snuffleupagus looking very somber and solemn. No insight whatsoever. But every so often, they would say, and we'll be back with more of the memorial service right after these messages. And the first time that happened... By the way, hi, I'm Bob. Okay. The first time that happened, it kind of clanked for me, sort of like an off note being hit in the middle of a song that where you just know, just and what? Wait, huh? Because it something was simply wrong. And then as I sat there looking at the screen and heard, you know, get a bucket of chicken. No, that wasn't there. That's just an old jingle. No, it was something like, and I brought you healthy, good McDonald's oatmeal with fruit today. Some ad. And Johnny, don't forget your Quaker oat squares. And if your toenails swell to 3 times the size of a Frisbee, you might need Pradaxa. Ask your doctor about Pradaxa. Commercial after commercial after commercial. and it just triggered something icky, or it triggered the icky response inside me. Now, here's a multi-billion-dollar broadcast empire, ABC, owned by Disney, which has been uber shameless and uber patriotic, supposedly, in advancing the tropes and memes of the government, the Bush administration, in the days after 9/11. And it just rang hollow. Now, later on in the day, several times during the NFL, I would see some sort of State Farm commercial or something like that, where some children were singing about New York. That was okay. But the more I thought about it, the more upset I got. This solemn, somber, sad reminder of a horrible day in recent American history, supposedly the defining day for this generation or this period of time in the United States. And I just had this image of some advertising sales creep at ABC just selling ads for another Sunday and another day with George and Diane and Christiane. And I got the shivers. They were hustling McDonald's hamburgers on the bones of the dead. They were hustling Quaker oat squares, snack bars, granola snacks, what the hell ever. They were hustling them on the bones of the dead. They were hustling prescription medications on the bones of the dead. They were hustling Samsung televisions on the bones of the dead. And I tweeted it, and it carried over to my Facebook, and a couple of bemused people said, well, Bob, they have to sell commercials to stay in business. No, they don't. No, they don't. They make lots of money. Oh, by the way, also locally dropped here in West Virginia because we've got a gubernatorial election here in about 3 weeks. Repiglicking attack ads against the loopy, sort of sleazy friend of cold Democrat who's running for governor here. Again, on the bones of the dead. There are ways to do this, you know. And the more I thought about it, the angrier I got. I think I mentioned on Friday evening that I'm a golf fan. I'm enough of a golf fan that, yes, I will actually watch golf on television. I know, sad, isn't it? But there's a very famous golf tournament. Happens in the spring of the year. It's called the Masters. CBS carries it. It is carried with what they call limited commercial interruption. A golf tournament. A little bit later in the day, not too much later, I scanned over to NBC and saw that the Rugby World Cup match between Ireland and the United States was about to be played. It was in tape delay. It wasn't even live. Not being a diehard rugby fan, I didn't know the outcome until, thanks, Spike. Spike told me that we had been righteously trounced by the Irish. Thanks, Spike. Kidding. But I watched. And there was not a single commercial interruption during the entire first half of play. Not one. By NBC. So let's recap. NBC, rerun of a rugby match, no commercial interruption. Every spring, CBS Sports, the Masters Golf Tournament, a standing memorial to misogyny and bigotry and prejudice. Limited commercial interruptions. A somber, solemn 10th anniversary memorial service for the dead and wounded and the weak and the weary of September 11th, 2001. Oatmeal square ads. Pathetic gray disc of meat ads from McDonald's. Prescription medicine ads. Television ads. There were a lot more. Those are just the four that I caught when I started thinking about it. Samsung, Pradaxa, McDonald's, and Quaker Oats. I guess I should just consider myself lucky that there wasn't an ad for an airline anywhere in there. Or maybe consider myself lucky that there wasn't an ad for Greyhound. Hi, we're Greyhound. We've never brought down a building. Take the bus and leave the war on terror to us. But it could have been sold. That's just sickening even to say it. It could have been sold with limited commercial interruption. It could have been marketed so that the people, the companies purchasing ads, instead of just running another one of their day in, day out, just another day of hustling meaningless crap to a credulous public ads, they could have had, hi, we're McDonald's. On this solemn occasion, we just want you to know that we're proud to help bring you this memorial event. You know, nothing fancy. It would have generated goodwill, and you wouldn't have had a 48-year-old hillbilly elitist crank sitting in front of his television screen screaming, mercenaries! Bloodthirsty, blood-sucking! Right. Because that's what they were. That's what that was. It was mercenary. Not even the faintest glimmer of tastefulness, of respect. You can almost hear the meeting in the sales department that week. Okay, Bill, you're going to take the... you've got this week. Of course, that's going to be the 9/11 memorial service. Just sell it like any other Sunday. See what kind of crap we can wedge in there. Because that's what it was. And what it was disgusting. Yeah, I fired off a few notes. Not that it's going to make any difference, but I did. Dear McDonald's, it'll be a cold day in hell the next time I walk into one of your establishments. After seeing that your same old, hustle another hamburger ads were running in the middle, you know, what I just said. And another one went to Samsung, and another one went to Pradaxa, and another one went to the Quaker Oats Company. Although I must say that is a lovely likeness of Barbara Bush that they're using on their oatmeal containers. So that was how Sunday got started. And there were still people, I don't understand, Bob. It's not the corporation's fault. They've got to sell it somehow. And it all goes back, I suppose, to that Robert F. Kennedy line. Some see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they could be and ask why not. But in for-profit media world, every minute of every day is just another opportunity to make a buck. And the whole world rotates on its axis and revolves around the sun for no other larger purpose than to make a buck. And I can't help wondering what kind of sad, sorry, misguided lives those kinds of people lead. Because if I was doing that in the middle of it, I realized, wait a minute, I'm hustling hamburgers on the bones of the dead. I think I'd have to check in somewhere. Or check out. Because that's just a little much. You know, during the entirety of the ABC coverage, there was a scrolling list of the dead that went back and forth behind Diane and George Snuffleupagus. We'll be back with more scrolling names of the dead after we've sold you a hamburger. Just sounds kind of nasty when you think of it in that light, doesn't it? Well, that's because it was kind of nasty. Maybe even, I don't know, evil. The ceremony itself was done, I thought, with appropriate solemnity and taste. It's just that it was impossible to broadcast it that way. I mean, there's all kinds of alternatives. ABC or anybody else could have said, you know what, we're going to just take a tax write-off on this one, and we're going to run the thing without commercials. And we'll write it off as public service, our public service obligation for the year. There were any number of alternatives. But the one that was the default was the one that involved selling a television, a granola bar, a hamburger. Right after Mrs. Name and right before Mr. Name. Because the names were still scrolling when they came back. Who did we miss? Whose name did we miss on the screen? Because McDonald's needed to sell a hamburger. And Samsung a TV. And Quaker a granola bar. And Pradaxa, in case your nose mysteriously slides off, Pradaxa may help. Talk to your doctor. Jesus. And I just, you know, I'm not asking you to live in the same weird little world as I do. But I do find it beneficial, I have to tell you, to sort of spin the cube and look at it on edge instead of staring at the same same quadrangled plane all the time, because it does look differently from different angles. John had written in Sunday morning as well. I told him I would share this with you yesterday, but, well, we know how yesterday turned out. So I'll share it with you now. Dr. John says, "Hey, Bob, I feel the need to get some thoughts out, and lucky you, you're about the only person around me who I think will get this. So please pardon if this doesn't really hang together. Last night at the Paragraph Factory," John works as a journalist right now, "last night at the Paragraph Factory, I was tasked with copy editing. Well, the entire news content of my paper. It was a double whammy. All stories for our 9/11 section, plus our continuing flood coverage. It was a busy and profoundly depressing night. I found myself looking forward to editing each new vignette of local people dealing with flood loss, as it was somehow less sad than vignettes about local people who lost relatives on September 11th, 2001. I do not want to remember 9/11. I do not want to watch goddamn news coverage from that day. I absolutely do not want to be watching football tonight, Sunday night, and have to be forced to see men in uniforms, men in suits, men in clergy robes tell me how much we've all changed since that day. Because from where I'm sitting, we haven't changed that much, or maybe we've changed for the worse. What have we learned about the world? And what have we shown the world? We've shown the world that we can live as a haunted people, frightened by every pronouncement from our government about terrorists. We've shown the world that we can continue to pour money into guns and bombs while our cities rot and our people suffer. We'll keep exporting death and destruction, keep extracting resources from less powerful places. We've turned what should have been an opportunity to turn our eyes inward and really take out our national soul and have a good long look at what we value and how we achieve it, and instead turned it into a pageant glorifying guns and gold. Jesus Christ, last night I read a piece about a man who was talking about all he can remember is the color of men's ties as he watched them jump from the World Trade Center. A woman who lives here got a phone call from her husband seconds before he died in the tower. The call was cut off. Their son was born in January 2002. I wouldn't presume to tell those people how they should remember that day, and I'll be goddamned if I'll sit here and be forced to fit my personal memories into some bullshit national narrative about exceptionalism, God's plan, the military-industrial security complex, etc., etc., etc. In the midst of all that, I came across one story. It was about how teachers are dealing with 9/11 in their classes. The following is from a professor at Elmira College near here. Twain's wife was from a powerful family in that town, and he and his family are all buried there. The site is peaceful, beautiful. Elmira College houses his actual custom-built writing building and offers a major in Mark Twain studies. If I'd known that about that 10 years ago, my life would be entirely different. Here's his thoughts from the article. Charlie Mitchell, associate professor of American Studies, said he'll have his students read two Twain essays this weekend as regards patriotism and the war prayer, and discuss them Monday. These pieces come from 1900 and 1901, so his immediate topic is the Spanish-American War of 1898 and 1899, which Twain opposed fairly strongly, Mitchell said. Both pieces kind of call into question one of the prevailing ideas of the day, my country, right or wrong. He's arguing that it's probably better to be thoughtful in one's attitude to one's country than to be a knee-jerk patriot. Mitchell said his goal in the class, Perspectives on the American Dream, is to get them to think about things as being more complicated than simple. In the case of 9/11, he said, he'll ask students to discuss, what is it we're commemorating? What is important, rather than thinking about who the bad guys and the good guys are? John continues, there. That's the kind of introspection I think this day calls for. I plan to read both of those tonight, before or after work, because what's really missing amid this orgy of self-pity is the idea that maybe, just maybe, we ought to make some changes about how we think of ourselves and our place in the world. And that's exactly the kind of thinking that will not be present. The people who died were indeed victims, but not of evildoers without motivation. They were victims of our own greed, power lust, and hubris. If we don't want them to have died in vain, then we cannot put their deaths off to God's will, random acts of misfortune, or some eternal struggle between right us and wrong them. I don't know what a fitting tribute would be except continuing to live American values, the ones we talk about a lot but so often fail to practice: liberty, equality, freedom, prosperity. None of which result from war, surveillance, arbitrary detention, or fear. John closes saying, thanks for letting me rant a bit. Now I'm off to scrub down my basement, then locate some Twain to read. I don't think it could be better said. You know, all around the country there were 9/11 commemorations. There was one at Mountaineer Field in Morgantown, West Virginia. This was a commemoration that took place right before the football team ran onto the field after having reverently touched a 350-pound lump of coal that came from the upper Big Branch mine, where 29 men died for nothing more or less than unmitigated, shameful, sickening human greed. Ron and Raleigh writing in, Bob, you poor man. Hey, Bob, how else can Michael Eisner be paid a gazillion dollars a year without those ads? And Michael Eisner is more than happy to hustle hamburgers on the bones of the dead. You want some sinew? Got a quarter pounder here with extra sinew. Char broiled. David in Tennessee. That's a most flattering choice for Babs' hat on the oatmeal box. Doesn't she look great? Stop with the Quaker oats, says Sandra. Be glad there were no condom ads, says Clayton. Yeah. Because they are shameless. I imagine the only reason there weren't airline ads is because nobody thought to get to them in time. Don't you? I mean, you don't think there would actually be any, shame? Any sense of propriety in advertising? You're kidding, right? Yeah. But I think if you want proof that, and by the way, another thing, I did Sunday morning, I sent out a note to our good friend Maura, just to tell her we here were thinking about her. She was profoundly affected by September 11th, 2001. And just to share with you what her response was, and the perspective of someone who saw it and lived it, Maura wrote back and said, thank you so very much for thinking of me today. It means more to me than you will ever know. I am avoiding all TV coverage and not reading any of the newspaper articles. I prefer to remember those that died quietly and respectfully. Which is how it should have all been handled. But I don't think you can call hustling hamburgers over singed human flesh either quiet or respectful. Do you understand now? And I realize that it's kind of a... I don't mean to be insulting when I say this, but do you understand now that there is no limit? There is absolutely no limit to the shameful, shameless depths of commercial greed in this nation. Because I think we would do well to always be cognizant of the fact that there is nothing that a for-profit media outlet will not do to make another godforsaken dollar. How do I know this? I have abundant proof. CNN completely prostituted itself out to the teabaggers last night. They didn't just host what they call a debate, what I call a pageant. They went all in. I mean, sickening. All in. The intro to the teabag pageant last night was absolutely repulsive. With Wolf Blitzer doing the opening announce over it. You would have thought it was Dancing with the Effing Stars. Revolting. It starts now. But the ultimate proof, really, that there will be no learning from September 11th, came in an exchange with, of all people, that weird little man from Texas. No, not Rick Perry, Ron Paul. Who dared, and, well, I don't know how to begin this. First of all, you remember when the audience practically masturbated in their seats last week, those repiglickins, at the mention of how many people Rick Perry had killed in the name of the people of the state of Texas? Remember how they cheered before he even answered the question? And I, by God, don't mean anything tepid either. I mean full-throated, make yourself hoarse hollering. Remember how they did that? Well, there was another one of those moments last night. This is that moment.
Governor, before I get to Michelle Bachmann, I want to just, you're a physician, Ron Paul, so you're a doctor. You know something about this subject. Let me ask you this hypothetical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what, I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy, I don't need it. but, you know, something terrible happens, all of a sudden he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma,
well,
for example? Who pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care
of him. What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. I practiced medicine before we had Medicaid in the early 1960s when I got out of medical school. I practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio, and the churches took care of them. We never turned anybody away from the hospital, and we've given up on this whole concept that we might take care of ourselves and assume responsibility for ourselves. Our neighbors, our friends, our churches would do it. This whole idea, that's the reason the cost is so high. The cost is so high, we cause a dump it on the government, becomes a bureaucracy, it becomes special interest, it kowtows to the insurance companies and the drug companies, and then on top of that you have the inflation. The inflation devalues the dollar. We have lack of competition. There's no competition in medicine. Everybody's protected by licensing. We should actually legalize alternative health care, allow people to practice what they want.
Congressman Bachman, go ahead and weigh in on...
Any questions? There is a significant portion of our nation that is sick as hell. And I don't mean needs to go to the... Well, I don't mean has a germ or a bug or a virus. I mean psychotic. I mean broken in the brain. You heard the cheering. They cheered for the notion of letting a 30-year-old hypothetical man just die. Some of them even gave verbiage to it. Let him die! Yeah! A question, simply put. Is that your America? Is that the America my father, my uncle, your father's grandfathers, mother's grandmothers struggled to keep afloat during the Great Depression and into the Second World War? Is that the America that they were struggling to perpetuate? Let him die! You know, I don't know. Maybe we can find some middle ground between the Perry people at the 1-2 weeks ago who cheered people being executed by the state, and the Ron Paul people who are cheering people being left to die by the state. Maybe we can hang the sick people. How's that?
Well, lethal injection is medication, Bob.
We live in a very, very sick, disturbing, disturbed country. They cheered the idea of leaving a man to die. Oh, and by the way, here is CNN's intro to that teabag-a-palooza last night.
Tonight, 8 Republicans, 1 goal, to win the White House and kick Barack Obama out. Cheering them on. Their powerful allies and fierce critics. The grassroots movement putting a bold stamp on this election. The Tea Party.
You notice their allies are powerful, but their critics are fierce. This can't possibly be coming from a real news network. No, it's coming from TNN.
Tonight. tonight's players.
I love America. I'll fight for America.
Mitt Romney, the early frontrunner.
Obamacare.
Focused on attacking the president. Now turning his attention to a more immediate opponent.
I'm going to be a pro-business president, and I'm not going to make any apologies about it.
Rick Perry, the newcomer. He got a late start, then surged to the front of the pack. With a conservative voice, folksy, and brash. Michelle Bachmann, the firebrand.
We're here to win.
She aced an early test in Iowa, proving she's a top-tier contender, as well as a lightning rod. The rest of the field is search of a breakthrough. John Huntsman. A diplomat, carving a more moderate path to try to defeat his ex-boss, the president. Ron Paul, the libertarian, billing himself as the freedom fighter in the race. Rick Santorum, the fighter, known for throwing hard punches from the right. Herman Cain, the businessman, who plays up his experience as a pizza executive and his inexperience in politics. Newt Gingrich, the big thinker, once the most powerful man in the House, now looking for traction after early stumbles. Tonight, 8 candidates, 1 stage, 1 chance to take part in a groundbreaking debate. The Tea Party's support and the Republican nomination on the line right now.
Fairgrounds here in Tampa, the site of the first ever Tea Party Republican presidential debate. 1 year from now, right here in Tampa, the Republican National Convention will nominate the Republican candidate for president of the United States. Tonight, 8 contenders will be on this stage to try to convince voters he or she is the best choice to hold the highest office in the country. And joining them inside this hall, Tea Party activists from Florida and across the nation.
Honestly, have you ever heard anything more over the top? Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, etc., all are having a fit right now. Oh. That really was. That was the intro to a game show or a reality television show. It was everything but one ring to rule them all, one ring to bind them, one ring to... It's insanity. But then, like I said, proof that there will be no learning. About out of the 10th anniversary of September 11th. The other telling moment was when poor little squeaky, weird Ron Paul tried to talk about the fact that maybe 9/11 happened because of the way we behave in the Middle East. And Rick, a napkin is not a bottle of champagne Santorum, the frothy mixture himself. Well, I think if he could have, he would have gone over and killed Ron Paul. 9/11 was not America's fault. And all those teabaggers who had so gloriously cheered when Ron Paul talked about leaving a man in his bed to die, well, it's just a little confused. Because all of a sudden they didn't like Ron Paul no more because he wasn't saying America was great for 9/11. He wasn't blaming all them Muslims like he's supposed to. Because he's supposed to. Because they ain't white. Are they? Marveline?
Yeah, I don't know, Emery.
No, there will be no learning. The only introspection will be had by people like us. And, of course, we'll be called un-American if we point out the fact that I mean, there was poor Ron Paulson. Did you? And he was kind of leaning over, a little bit beady-eyed at the audience. Did you know that Osama bin Laden said he wanted us to get off the holy ground of Saudi Arabia, and that's why he done it? Boo! 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 Did you know that maybe they done it because we treat the Palestinians so poorly? And boo! Really, boo! I liked him. Marveline, I liked him while he was wanting that 30-year-old feller, hypercritical feller to die. I don't know if he's American anymore. That wanting the feller to die part, that was real American. But this looking around and figuring that maybe somehow America wasn't just lily white and innocent. Well, I don't think I like Ron Paul anymore, even though he does want us to have gold currency. And I'd certainly like to have a little jingling gold in my pocket. That fair tax, that sounds pretty good. But not if he's going to talk about America that way, actually talk about the sleazy, tawdry, murderous things that we've done in the Middle East. I don't like talking about that, Marvelline. David in Tennessee noting, oh, Lordy Bob, I hope the rest of the world didn't see that. Can you imagine what the Germans or Brits think of that Vegas act? Oh, but they did, they did. And by the way, speaking of other people seeing or hearing how we think, whatever happened to politics ends at the water's edge? Did you happen to notice that right-wing Islamophobe Peter King traveled across the Atlantic Ocean to address a committee of the British Parliament today? Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Peter King told the Parliament that he's all worried about that First Amendment thingy. No, really.
Would you like to see better controls on the Internet, on these social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter?
Yes, I do. Now, we have a First Amendment issue which does not confront you, or does not really pertain in Great Britain. So we're trying to find ways how can it be done without violating the First Amendment and involving freedom of speech and communication.
Yeah, he's worried about Muslims getting hold of the Facebook and the Twitter. Never mind the fact that, he supported the Irish Republican Army once upon a time, Peter King did, but, you know, well. Youthful indiscretions, I guess. No, actually, he said he stands by his prior statements in support of the IRA, quote, in the context that they were said. I don't think you can say a context. You can make a context, but you can't say one. Lordy, if a Democrat or a liberal went abroad and said something like that, he would be savaged in the American media. And absolutely, practically drawn and quartered on the floor of the Senate and the House of Representatives by the Republican Party. But since it's a Republican, well, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. Right? Yeah, that's what I thought. So just a few things to get us started. We are far from done. We'll take a little break and come back. You know the number here, right? 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. If you want to save us the toll-free charges, you are more than welcome to do so. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. Just one last piece of email. I got a little got an email from Mark in Japan, an expatriate. Mark's a little put out with me. He says, "Dear Bob, I listen every day, but that may come to an end. You condemn Obama's speech and proposal before even hearing it for yourself. Shame on you. The man is doing the best he can with a Congress that will allow nothing ever. The point you should be hammering home is that until we control all of Congress as well as the presidency, the 60% Congress will allow nothing ever that will benefit the middle class. because of the filibuster abuse. What better to get the point across? You really ought to be espousing a massive voter registration in spite of and because of their efforts to limit voting by those who need the vote most because of the filibuster. President not sure? Yeah, that's great. Let's do all we can to ensure the downfall of America. Burn, baby, burn approach? Sad, Bob, sad. I'm listening to both sides and they're winning. Despite the hilarity and insanity of their candidates, they're winning. How fucking insane is that? Gee, Bob, no wonder you're struggling to fund your sometimes on-the-air show. I appreciate your need to speak your mind, but think about who is listening. It's the filibuster, stupid. Like it or not, I'm a member of your Horn family because I listen every day. All the best, Mark. Well, the fact of the matter is, we call him President Not Sure because in the film Idiocracy, character who becomes President Not Sure is actually the smartest man in America. Just say it. And I'm sorry about my sometimes on the air show. I'll try to be less sick. See if I can get my daughter to have less surgery. Okay? Good. Maybe I'll stay back here and stay on the air instead of going out and walking the walk, and I'll just sit here and talk the talk. I didn't condemn Obama's speech before I heard it. I said precisely it would be a great speech. It was a great speech. He gives a great speech. But does anybody think the thing... And now, I mean, he's out there. He's being a little forceful. He's saying, pass the bill the way it is. Leave it alone. Pass it. Complete with cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Pass it. Being real forceful about it. And the Repiglicans are being a little less hateful than they usually are, which is interesting. But, yeah, you're right. We do struggle to fund this program. Because we don't do things like sell hamburgers on the bones of the dead. Or try to exploit the listenership. Because, you know, it's like that thing on Sunday, the memorial service. It could have been bear hunting with one thumb McShotgun. And they still would have run the McDonald's ads and the Quaker Road ads. That's the point. There is not a single commercial enterprise out there that is delivering programming where the programming is the most important thing. All commercial broadcasting is designed to bring you to a potential seller, not bring programming to a potential viewer or listener. Except operations like this. It really is about the programming. And when you choose to support it, and a couple of you have this evening, it's the first that we have seen in a very, very long time since, we had one contribution Friday night, and except for that, nothing else until going back to like last Tuesday. So thank you. Thank you very much. It all pays bills. It all does. So anyway, it's time for the Green News Report. We'll take a break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thank you. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 13th, 2011.
Pakistan floods and pipelines explode again. Arctic sea ice hits record low again. Ground turkey from Cargill contaminated with salmonella again. Plus,
why is the EPA in a rush to push regulations that would saddle Americans with higher energy costs and throw even more of us out of work?
Republicans and their fossil fuel friends open a full court press against the EPA. Again and again and again.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We've got to remove some of those barriers out of the way that are being created by the federal government. I would start with an EPA that's gone wild. That's where we start.
Ooh, EPA gone wild. That sounds hot, Herman Cain. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, while they've been warming up towards this for a while, it seems like this week the full-out attack on the EPA began, and it was launched yesterday morning with this story at Tucker Carlson's fake news site, The Daily Caller, an article by a guy named Matthew Boyle, who said that a Texas energy plant was shutting down plants and coal mines would lose 500 jobs thanks to horrible EPA regulations. Of course, once we looked into the story, we found there was much more to it that poor Matthew Boyle told me, and you can read it at bradblog.com. He just couldn't find. He couldn't find the other side of the story.
Yeah, the head of the Environmental Integrity Project, who says that in reality, this Dallas-based coal-fired power plant company, Luminant, is actually opportunistically using the EPA to cover up their own bad investment decisions. Like back in 2007, they bet billions on coal just as natural gas prices were plummeting, and now their coal plants are worth only a fraction of what they paid.
So they're using the EPA as a scapegoat for their own business failures. Who'd have thunk it?
Yep. More on the full court press against the EPA in a moment, but first, some green headlines. Factory farming giant Cargill has announced yet another recall of ground turkey due to salmonella contamination from the same processing plant in Arkansas that was the source of a massive, record-breaking recall of ground turkey just a month ago that killed one person and sickened over 100.
It's nice that Cargill is one of the major suppliers to the school lunch program, too, isn't it?
Yes, they are.
Delicious.
61 people were killed in a pipeline explosion in Kenya on Monday. Residents in an impoverished community had rushed to collect hundreds of gallons of gasoline spilling from a leak in a pipeline when an ember from a nearby fire ignited the spill, creating a fireball that engulfed the entire neighborhood. Hundreds were injured. 141 people have been killed in Pakistan after unusually heavy seasonal monsoon rains have led again to deadly flooding this year. The country is still reeling from the biblical floods last year that covered a fifth of the country and displaced 20 million people. The Pakistan government has requested emergency international aid to assist more than 4 million now displaced by the latest floods. Here in the U.S., the summer wasn't just hot, it was record hot. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says that the span of June, July, and August 2011 was the second hottest summer on record for the entire U.S., just a smidgen below the all-time record set in 1936 during the Dust Bowl. Arctic sea ice is again melting to record lows in the summer. Preliminary measurements indicate that the extent of sea ice in the Arctic has reached new record lows in 2011, breaking the previous record set in 2007 and continuing the long-term decline as predicted by climate scientists.
Predicted but completely ignored by climate science deniers who say, you know, this whole thing is just a hoax, Des.
But climate science was completely missing from the CNN Tea Party debate on Monday night. The debate, which was an unprecedented partnership between CNN and the Tea Party Express, a political action committee, the energy policies from the Republican presidential contenders were essentially the same as they pretty much always are: drill everywhere and burn everything. But they all joined hands to bash the EPA. Here's Herman Cain.
I would put together a regulatory reductions commission. The people that I would appoint to that commission will be people who have been abused by the EPA.
Now, by abused by the EPA, does he mean people who have clean air, clean water now, thanks to the EPA?
No, I think he's talking about the fossil fuel industry, who really got their money's worth from the advertising during the Tea Party debate. Commercial breaks filled with shiny image ads for the fossil fuel industry and an aggressive new ad campaign against the EPA from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity.
The EPA needs to slow down. Tell Congress to make sure they do.
Of course, it's a lie that Americans must choose between jobs and their health. And of course, there is no such thing as clean coal. But with the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling unleashing corporate spending on politics, we can expect a tsunami of these third-party ads attacking the EPA, environmental, and public health regulations for the next 15 months.
It also begs the question as to how aggressive CNN, MSNBC, and, well, Fox News can be in their reporting on these issues, given that they are making millions from the fossil fuel companies to run these propaganda ads. For more on all of these stories and the ones we had no time for today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please do consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report, at least until the fossil fuel companies decide they want to spend millions advertising with us. We're not holding our breaths. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten past the hour, and well, enough shilly-shallying about I filibustered for far too long, but I kind of had to get that off my chest. To the phones we go, I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Man, people are hecka techy. What's up with the, attacks on the show every other day?
Phase of the moon, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you were...
Well, I mean, Sandra, I think I'm pretty mild where President Obama is concerned. I mean, I get these emails calling him a fascist war criminal, yada, yada, yada. You know, of course, they come from a guy who's never listened to the show, but, you know, why should listening to the show matter?
Well, no, but I guess, you know, people are so, it's just sort of hard to be really critical when in the face of what we saw the other night. So I can sort of appreciate that, but, you know, you can't be hoodwinked about what's going on, though, with Obama, you know? I mean, I'm not going to say he's as bad as those people on the stage the other night, no. But, you know, there's some issues.
He ain't FDR.
Well, there's some issues because it's like, oh, wait, now all of a sudden he's going from coast to coast around the world, you know, being aggressive. I think he actually almost said Republican today, you know. And I'm sorry to be cynical, but it's just like, you know, you could have done this for every issue that was a problem, Mr. Obama. What's up? So it's hard for me to get too... I can't believe it no more.
You just said something that's really, really important, Sandra. He could have gotten this way with any issue he wanted to.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why it's just kind of like... So it's hard for me to, you know, drum up a whole bunch of rah-rah with it now. We've been in this administration for a number of years now, and the situation in this country has been dire since Obama came in, not because of him, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it did chat my ass last night to hear him... I forget which one. You know, Newt's good for a cutie like that. Maybe he's the one who said the Obama depression.
Well, no, I mean, that's just a joke. I mean, you know, we know what he came in with, and that's a given. There's no way that this man could take care of everything that went on for the last 30 years that came to a head. I mean, no one, at least not me, and I don't hear too many other people on the horn talking like that, but... you know, things are too serious for us to sort of kowtow behind some Democratic leader now. You know what I mean? It's beyond that. It's like, oh, no. When I saw them people, that crowd, and the sort of corporate support from the media to every corporation that these teabagging people get, I just still have flashes of Weimar Germany, because... Not a comment, not a blink when people are cheering for someone to die if they don't happen to have, you know, made the right choice about insurance. And, you know, that whole mentality, that, you know, Ron Paul, I mean, that's him. He revealed himself for real there. And
yeah, there wasn't anything new in that. Did you catch the end of it, the little last remark question, Sandra, where they said, here's your chance to show your personality. What would you bring to the White House? What would you change about the White House? There was Ron Paul.
I'd bring a bushel basket of common sense and a course in Austrian economics.
Yeah, no, and it's just like, dude, you know, I mean, and the thing about him, people, you know, it's like his whole foreign policy trip is out of a page from, Charles Lindbergh. He's an isolationist. Don't get it, you know, get it straight, people. His isolationist isn't what the U.S. is about either. So, he's dubious as hell.
That's why I've always said that, like, on things like Iraq and Afghanistan, that he was right for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, he's just a throwback from the sort of isolationist, and I always think of Charles Lindbergh. You know, he was a fascist.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Out and out, fascist.
Came home from Germany talking about his lovely luncheon with Mr. Hitler?
Right. I mean, he was all wrong, but he represents a tradition of Republican isolationism that, you know, was countered by Woodrow Wilson and the other internationalists, kind of like what Obama. I don't like to throw Obama into Wilson because Wilson was such a horrific racist. I can't really think of another person, but you know what I mean. Wilsonian type of foreign policy versus this isolationist shit that these people are associating with Ron Paul. But his real doctrine is what we heard about, you know, freedom and choices. And it just goes on and on because Mr. Paul, if he has to choose between eating and buying this policy you're talking about, then what? That's the problem with the libertarians. Then what?
And see, I mean, and just to take it a step further, Sandra, you know, Friday evening, I had that story about the not the hypothetical guy, but the real guy. The real 26-year-old guy in South Carolina who has breast cancer.
Right.
Now, he's not hypothetical. He's got a job. He goes to work every day. He makes $9 an hour. He gets 30 hours a week. What do you say to that guy? Because the reality is he was too rich. I mean, let's put it that way. He was too rich, Sandra, to be able to get on Medicaid in South Carolina.
Well, No, but the thing about it is, you know, I guess people don't really listen to what these libertarians, because their whole ideology is just a bunch of bullshit, because it don't make no sense what Ron Paul is implying. He's trying to say, basically, and if you keep going down the line with them, if you get sick, somehow that's a choice? Hello. They can reduce everything to a choice, which means that vast swaths of people will just die off like they do in many places around the world right now. Somalia comes to mind.
Well, you know, you're the one who referenced the Malthusian streak the other night.
Well, you know, that's what...
And, you know, Ron, libertarianism kind of has one.
Right, but to listen to them, because they stammer around, because I have to give it, you know, Wolf Blitzer ain't my favorite, but I was like, damn, he came out with at least a half a good-ass question there. He didn't take it to as far as I would, but he did ask. But what the thing that was really disturbing, though, is those people in the crowd. They're like, oh, I'm going to have to, because I listened to a follow-up, I'm going to have to check more into Ron Paul, and, you know, all upset. And it's like, wait a minute, bitch. You cheering for people to die, but you upset about the Taliban taking out motherfuckers because they invaded the country? You know, get a clue. I mean, you can't have it both ways. If you went to dog-eat, if your ass was being invaded, you would whip out whatever gun or three or four you got. So now you can't make the connection that Ron Paul just told your ass? Listen, it's scary what's going on. These people are so stupid. Now, I don't want to say they're stupid, but they have no interest in reviewing the facts. And let me just add, did Michelle Bachman must have got her hair did, because she got something for because she got something for Rick Perry. You know, that's not my favorite girl, but I was like, oh, snap, if she didn't call him on the corporation, too. I said that hair was looking mighty fine.
Yeah, and I bet she shaved above the knee, too.
You know, I know she crazy, but I was like, me and my friend was sitting in the car listening to NPR, and they played that clip. I said, oh, shit, I wish I saw her hair, because that shit was, she was on it.
Oh, no, she had a whole new...
Him.
Oh, no, Sandra, she had a whole new do.
Oh!
I thought you'd already seen the video. Damn.
No, I only listened to some of it. No, I was... No, I... First I'm hearing,
they took that straightening iron to it, and it was all planed out in one direction and planed down in another direction. I mean, it was real Jetson.
Shit, I was right. She did get her hair did. Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
No, they're crazy, you know. Anyway, yeah, but she... You're right about the other bit of that, though. I hope the NARAL is cutting up editing right now, because she's talking about choices and females.
She wasn't a little bit, Sandra. She was, and, I mean, she had that head going. And I swear, I think she put one wrist on her waist. And I am offended for the little girls that didn't have a choice.
Maybe she came out of a. Maybe she had a screen that went for a screening of the Help too. So you know, we might have to. I don't know. I was taken off. Seriously though, I really was sort of laughing. I thought, damn, Rick Perry. It's like, keep your ass in Texas.
Well, did you hear the quote of the day on Rick Perry?
Oh no, what?
This came from a. I mean, you know, write this down. This came from a Republican strategist. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
He tweeted last night, watching Rick Perry try to string together two sentences about policy is like watching a chimp play with a locked suitcase.
Another thing, he's an idiot because he said, I'm offended if you think I'm a hoe for $5,000. But $30 million is okay.
Right, I mean, exactly. That was where I was. No. He's a lot more expensive than that, Michelle.
I was laughing, though. I said, damn, at least you were up front. So his handlers need to reel him in. He needs to go to a few little classes, because as soon as they got up his ass, he kind of fell apart. Because how are we going to go up there and admit, okay, well, no, I wouldn't do nothing for $5,000. I raised $30 million. So the connection one can make in the audience or in the TV land is that, oh, okay, but you'll do whatever you need to do for $30 million.
Right? Right. It's like that old punchline. It's like that old joke whose punchline is, no, we already know what you are. We're only negotiating the price.
That's what he said about himself, though. That's why it was so damn funny. I'm like, man, these people, these corporate backers, they better try to inject some IQ in these folks because they sounded hella stupid.
Well, and speaking of corporate backers, and Brad Friedman and Desi mentioned it in the Green News Report, of course, this thing was sponsored in big part by the coal industry.
Oh, God. Well, the coal industry and CNN, they are locked up, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, that's why their battle for Blair Mountain piece turned out to be a story about the poor, beaten down, bedraggled mountaintop removers family that's being assaulted by all those mean, nonviolent hippies.
And, you know, I was shaking my head because, you know, I was one of them people. I just couldn't watch the ceremony. But I am in shock about the commercials. It's like these people could have just let that go commercial free. They got enough money for it. That is despicable. And like you said, the names are still rolling when McDonald's was on. What about them people?
Right.
I mean, it is so ugly and horrible, you can barely comment on it. It is so outrageous. It's scandalous.
Well, what kind of blew me away, Sandra, was the little bit of pushback that I got from people saying, well, you know, this is America, and that's how they pay for broadcasting.
Wait, that's the pushback you got? You mean you had people actually pushing back on that?
Yes.
There is no explanation from anybody who's not an executive for those corporations. Everybody else should be equally outraged. Who's going to push? What toady is pushing back? Somebody on Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
God, I mean...
I think we're friends on Facebook. Go look. It's there. Not too far down.
You know, I don't really...
Well, I'm public. I mean, anybody can see my page, so...
No, that's fine. I'll have a look. But what I'm... I guess it's just kind of, I guess people, you have to understand that the public airways are that public, and before we were completely corporatized, there was an obligation because they got the right to print money, which is what a broadcast license is, right?
Absolutely.
They would have to come back and give something back. Now, if reading of names from the day that everything changed isn't warrant enough for them to run some free shit? Wow. I don't know what is. I guess it's been 10 years.
That's the thing that sent me running around the damn room, Sandra.
I guess time's up. Maybe
the first half of the rugby match was delivered by NBC without commercials.
Well,
the rerun of the rugby match.
No way. You're kidding. By the way, go All Blacks. Sorry, I spent some time down there, and the All Black, and they all look good, too. Sorry to digress, but yeah, the World Cup, that's on it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, fantastic. And the All Black, I don't know, they pounded Tonga. It's like 41 to...
Oh, it was a beating.
Something like a beat down. I'm like, good Jesus. Anyway, I'm sorry, I don't mean to digress, but yeah, the World Cup. That's great.
Oh, and the Irish beat us borrowed mules, and the Irish fans were all pissed off because they didn't beat us more.
No, they got hella criticized. I was reading some articles in the Guardian. They were like, oh, you know what? The U.S. isn't going on, but the U.S. had a wonderful showing. You know, considering the trauma of what? You know, I'm not buying it anymore with the 9/11 because. If I did not hear people say, oh, how come they don't have any sales today? I'm not lying. So, you understand?
Say what?
Yes. So, no.
And I mean, Jesus, the NFL, boy, did I love watching. I'm sorry. There are a few things in life that are more satisfying. I mean, there are more things. But just in terms of passivity. There are few things in life, Sandra, that are more satisfying than watching the Dallas Cowboys come undone.
Now listen, if I see Tony Romo coming out apologizing for his team one more time, he need to be roped. You an idiot. Anyway, I couldn't have been more happier, though.
I mean, did that center just center the ball, like, ding right into his chest?
What the?
while he was off looking around or something. Got him.
Yeah, no, but you see, you think about it, though, it's just because it's Dallas and, you know, that.
No, Jerry Jones is going to put out a hit on Tony Romo if he's not careful. Jones, that kind of man.
Yeah, over the top with his huge billion-dollar, you know, stadium, and he still can't win. So, no, that was enjoyable. Right up there with, I know I might offend, but Indianapolis, that shit was funny, too. It's like, Peyton, where are you?
Yeah, Peyton may not be coming back.
You know, what can I say? I was laughing. I thought, oh, well, maybe you'll win one, fool.
34-7.
That was a shame. And the Giants. Oh, well, good start.
I was actually happy for the Jets. I'm generally not a Jets fan, but that just, I mean, because beforehand they had what's his name, the defensive just world beater for the Cowboys, Ware. They had him. I consider it a high honor to be for Dallas to be representing today in this game here in New York. And I mean, they had video footage of him running around with an American flag and.
Oh, no, listen.
Stop, you know.
That was great, but another one in this, and if we're on the football, and then we can stop, but another thing had me laughing, too, because I'm that kind of sick person, was the Cam Newton. It's like, oopsie, wow, what you got to say now about him? And, you know, get paid, get your money, put it in the bank, fuck you. I was like, damn, work it. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it came up on the short end.
And I'm like, you know, the way they ran that kid down because he wanted to get some money, screw you, you know. So it was good to see.
Yeah, it came up short, but not for want of trying on his end. And on the other hand, I am informed that the Denver fans in the middle of a beatdown when we're chanting Tebow, Tebow, Tebow.
Listen, that's I can't even deal with the Denver thing. That's hilarious. Yeah, no, and then, you know, the football was, I have to say, that was all, it was so many hilarious narratives because the Ricky Williams, of course, that freak is in Baltimore, and it's beautiful because he said, I ain't never had as much pleasure and enjoyment in beating the Steelers. I was rolling because, you know, Ricky Williams, he crazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Straight up high, some Zen BS, but that comment was funny as hell. God damn. But anyway.
And, well, then the Steelers, I mean, just.
Yeah, Ron, you beat
not
the,
ready
beat
for
the
prime
rapist.
Time.
Beat the rapist, and, you know, what can I say?
Well, it was a great day of football, Sandra. It really was. I mean, it was one of the better opening days I remember.
Well, and of course, you probably have like three people listening to the show now.
No, I don't think it's quite that bad, but no, there's an interplay here, Sandra, and you recognize it, and I recognize it too. Where else, with the exception of that rugby game, would we have to stop? I mean, is there any other country that mixes its national politics and its war making and all of that stuff inside its sport like the United States does?
Oh, no. I mean, but it's, you know, it's kind of typical of empire, though. You know what I mean? It fits the sort of Roman model quite well, actually. So it's not surprising, but it is so tedious, though. But I can't believe that they showed the rugby without a break. I'm still stuck on that. And they had to advertise for this 9/11 business.
Well, and remember, you know, no kidding, the Masters will come on this spring, and it will be offered with, you know, a couple of commercials every 45 minutes. For, you know, the Masters that won't let women, you know, into the clubhouse.
Oh, that's right. It's always brought on by CBS, isn't it?
Yeah, limited commercial interruption by Travelers, you know, and Travelers was advertising yesterday without limiting their interruptions. You know, that little red umbrella and that sad-ass dog.
Yeah, no. I didn't watch it, so I'm just shocked. I'm like, wow, you know, that's terrible. And you haven't seen any sort of media critique on that at all? Are you only
one? No, I'm the only one.
Well, that's amazing because that's so sick.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm just not tapped in. I think it's just so automatic that we expect everything to be commercialized, everything to be monetized. Of course we're going to sell hamburgers with dead people in them.
Well, you know, when I was listening to some of that Republican debate stuff in the crowd, you know, because I screw the participants, but the crowd, I'm just thinking, damn, I wonder how they would, some of the people would do in a Russo's stag hunt. You know what that is? You know about that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because that just popped in my mind. I'm thinking about, they have no idea about cooperation, so it would be rabbit stew all around.
Oh yeah. Oh, and I got to share this with you. This just rolled in from David in Tennessee, with regard to Tony Romo.
Yeah.
David says, tell Sandra, on the Dan Patrick radio show, they have a game show within the show. It's called Romo, Then or Now. Dan's staff plays a clip of Romo saying he's frustrated and so forth. Dan then has to identify now or then. He got three of the five going back to 2008, and they had music in the background to boot. David said it's an absolute hoot to hear.
No, I listen to the Dan Patrick show sometimes, too, because the show is so smug. But it has some funny bits.
Yeah, but it's pretty smart, too. I mean,
well, no, it's very smart, but I like more Dan, less Danette. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Those dudes are like...
Oh, and you know, I got to tell you this, because this is my little name-dropping moment. You know Football Night in America on NBC on Sunday nights?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know the guy who knows all the stats and numbers and everything at the end of the show? His name is Mike... Florio.
Okay.
He's real polished looking, great hair. You know, kind of bookends with Dan Patrick over there.
Yeah, the hair. Everyone has great hair.
Oh,
right?
Awesome hair.
Like a running joke with Dan Patrick. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike Florio is a classmate of mine.
All right.
Yeah. While I was having my cup of coffee in law school, he was busy becoming first in our class.
Oh, okay.
And just to tell you just to give you a sense of what lawyering's like out there. He comes out of law school, gets one of these jobs where you work from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, Monday through Saturday, carrying some guy's briefcase at a defense firm.
Right.
But he is an absolute NFL freak. And I mean, uses that lawyerly analytical mind, just absorbing stats, absorbing figures, absorbing... And sets up this website a million years ago, and the guy was consistently more right than anybody else on the planet. And he's parlayed that into a gig on NBC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I kind of dig that. It's like, hey, I know him.
That's, well, listen, whatever you have to do, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, what happened to, I suppose, yeah, because he doesn't work for MSNBC anymore, because Keith Olbermann was on that for a minute.
Yeah, and a half. doesn't Keith still show up on Patrick's radio show periodically?
Well, yeah, but I haven't really. I don't think since he left the other ship, as he described. That show has its really funny moments, I have to say. But anyway, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about.
You got to go back and check Michelle's hair. You laid me low with the beginning of the call, just because I thought you really knew. I mean,
no,
she had her. I mean, and because I was watching the Twitter feed during it all, and it was all about, wow, what happened to Michelle's hair?
Oh no! That's just a running gag in our house about people getting their hair and nails and stuff did.
But she did, and one more giggle before you have to go.
Okay.
I saw the ultimate Marcus Bachman line last night, and I wish I saw who had said it on Twitter so I could give them credit. I was ruined for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
If Marcus Bachman was any deeper in the closet, he'd be riding a lion through Narnia.
Shit, you know,
just beautiful.
That's great. No way. You know, because I shared a couple of YouTube videos of him, you know, with a couple of family friends, if you know what I mean by family, and they were like, oh, snap. They couldn't believe it. these are like, you know, guys who are just, you know, they're not, but they were just like, wow. So, I mean, dude is so suspect.
Yeah, I saw another remark of today, a picture of Michelle, but it was like a baseball trading card.
Yeah.
You know, with the stats and the facts and the figures, it said Michelle Bachmann, R, Minnesota, has never seen her husband naked.
No, listen. The other comment that was killing me from that that debate was, you know, that you're back to what they would take to Washington. That, you know, Rick Perry had to bring up his beautiful wife. It's like, yeah, you know, you got to talk about your bit because everyone thinks
that you ain't batting for the team.
You're gonna be bringing some Crisco and whatnot to the White House.
You know, no, he. Exactly. It was the same thing I thought. Dude, we know you're married. But, no, that whole exchange was just so very, very weird.
Oh, no. It's for him to talk about that. It's like, that's what you're going to bring to, you know, who cares? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because we were all figuring he was going to ditch her and leave her in Austin and just, you know, hang the mirror ball in the Oval Office.
No, but that's because of that closet door. You know, that's his whole story. Anyway, yeah, that was really gruesome. Okay, well, listen, I guess that's it.
Sandra, have a wonderful evening, dear.
All right, bye.
Later. Sandra calling from California. your moment, your NFL moment for the evening as well. Hey, welcome to the program.
God, I don't call in for weeks, and then I have to follow Sandra.
Yeah, but if there's anybody who can, Reverbo, it's you.
I just have to push on and do the best I can. She, because in my opinion, your most revered and highly rated mind of all your calls.
Now you're going to make people jealous.
All right, well, I'm setting up a challenge here. Okay, let's see what y'all got.
Yeah. What is it Jim Rome says? Have a take and don't suck.
That's exactly right.
God.
Is he still on the air?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is the same old shtick?
If it's still getting you paid $1 million, don't fix it.
I guess not. I can tell you, the numbers came out today, Bob, and I can, while I can't tell you how many people are sick today, I can tell you how many people, if they were feeling sick, would be charging their visit to the doctor to the for-profit insurance companies who will gladly pass those costs on to you. And that would be 50 million Americans.
You know, that's in extent, that's, there's 300 million Americans, 50, God, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, and it's, and between 1 and 6 and 1 and 7 of our neighbors are today unemployed. 46.
You know, those aren't the numbers that a healthy nation puts up, Reverbo.
Coincidentally, about 1 in 6 of us now live in poverty.
Yeah, I saw that those went up too.
I guess we're really bringing up the rear these days. Everybody's mighty proud. They should be just really proud.
Yeah, is this the part where I cue up Lee Greenwood?
Oh, man, I don't
And I'm
know.
Proud to live in America where at least I know I'm broke.
You know how anybody can, you know, you just hate to go over the same old ground, don't you? But I'm telling you, how can anyone, you know, in the face of years and years of evidence, you know, continue to just fall for this madness?
Well, did you happen, I mean, and I don't fault you if you didn't, did you happen to tune in and see that crowd last night in there?
I couldn't do it. I was going to get to that. There was no way I could watch that. I couldn't do that to myself. I knew I couldn't do it, and I didn't even try to do it. Mark, we're just all trying to get along here. Just calm down. But he, you know, giving you crap about reaching your conclusions about Obama's speech before he gave it. Hey, this wasn't hard to do at all. These people are like mind fucked beyond Ayn Rand's wildest dreams. I couldn't do it.
Well, you know, they do put out transcripts before it goes down, but, you know, just saying.
Paul, he really is a character, that Ron Paul. And it's funny because do you remember and I was living in Colorado at the time when this all went down. But a little, right after 9/11, there was a University of Colorado professor, kind of a whack job, and his name was...
Ward Churchill.
Ward Churchill, and Ward Churchill, yes, he wrote like a little paper, basically, it was the blowback theory, remember?
Yes.
It's exactly what our friend Mr. Paul was talking about, evidently, the other night. And somehow, you know, it's valid. Well, the fact is that it's always been valid. I mean, if you don't watch where you step, you're going to step on it. You might step on a big snake. And, boy, you wouldn't have believed the brouhaha that caused.
Oh, didn't they threaten his life and so forth?
Well, they wanted to fire him, but they couldn't fire him on First Amendment grounds. But they ended up, like I say, he was kind of a whack job, as some of these people are wont to be anyway. And I think he claimed he was an Indian or something, and they eventually fired him for plagiarism or something. But I think he appealed the whole thing, and the court awarded him $1, which is irrelevant. They found
no, but yeah, it was about being vindicated.
Right, this mass hysteria. But interesting, isn't it? How that that theory really always has been has some validity to it.
Well, I mean, I've never understood how it didn't, Reverbo. When you drop bombs on people, when, as Jeanette noted on my Facebook page, when you pick up people in the dark and still of the night from other nations and render them, you know, Jesus, that's what we do to pork fat to make lard. We render them. And you kill their civilians. I mean, you know, did you see where George Bush took credit for the killing of Osama bin Laden a couple of days ago?
Doug, don't do this to me. No.
Well, he did.
Got to give him one for that.
Brass, if nothing. Is that bell brass? Because it needs to be brass for that.
Oh, my. George Bush.
But, you know, I saw another comment that says, I wonder what it's like on 9/11 in Iraq when they start counting the million dead people who were innocent of everything and were killed just the same. We lost 3,000 people on September 11th, 2001. A number of other people were sickened and maimed. But we used that as an excuse to kill a million innocent people. And I didn't hear those million innocents mentioned, no, not once on Sunday.
Well, you probably won't ever hear them. You'll have to see.
No, because they don't exist.
No. Collateral damage, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't really drop bombs on Saudi Arabia now, can you?
I guess not, although, oddly enough, the Spanish have decided that they're not afraid. Guess what the Spanish court's done, Reverbo?
What have they done?
They have resurrected or revived or whatever they do with charges over there, rape charges against the guy who is the number one minority shareholder in Fox News and the single largest shareholder in Citigroup. Prince Al-Walal bin Tazarid, you know, that guy. 24th richest man in the world. Allegations that in 2008 he invited a young woman aboard his giga yacht. No, really, that's the word for it.
Yeah.
Drugged her and had his way with her. They're not afraid. The Spanish don't, you know.
Well, didn't the Spanish bring, or attempted to bring charges of war crimes against Cheney and Bush?
I can't remember. Was that the Spanish or was that the Italians? No, the Italians wanted the CIA agents.
Yeah, the Spanish did, and then there actually was some pressure put on them to just go ahead and why don't you forget that? Yeah, interesting. And then when you consider that the Spanish had had a horrific terror attack in their subway system themselves, they lost it. I mean,
right. And what did they do, Reverbo? They proceeded to have an orderly, sane, methodical law enforcement investigation, and lo and behold, they caught the little bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile,
they really have to mobilize their Marines to do it.
No, nobody running onto beaches yelling for Christ and St. James or anything.
Well, they sure got theirs, didn't they? 5 years ago, the Spanish were just doing fine, thank you. They weren't in the red at all, and now they, thanks to some bizarre intervention and strange investments and highly unusual private investment decisions, now they're going down the drain. Funny that. They were doing just fine.
But now, well, blowback. But the fact that we live in a nation with monsters like in these last two pageant audiences who cheer miserable death and outright murder. Reverbo, it's kind of hard not to look up and go, you know, because there's not enough of them, as I've said before, there's not enough of them, Reverbo, to actually win an election. But there's certainly enough of them to ruin one.
Well, there's enough of them if we just decide to stay home. There's enough of them. There's enough of them if we just hand it to them. But, you know, Sanders' right. This is really the crux of all this. See if this makes any sense to you. If you turn all of us into peons, how exactly are we going to pay our own way?
And I can't make that mathematical computation. It keeps coming up nulls.
I mean, you want to turn everybody into like this part-time minimum wage Walmart world, and yet I have to, you know, shell out hundreds if not thousands of dollars a month for health care and my own retirement. I mean, so you're going to penalize me. Shit, I'm living in my mom's basement in your world until I'm 43. I can't even afford to go to college. Exactly how am I going to pay for all this shit? They really haven't thought this through, Bob.
I go back and forth. I vacillate on that. On the one hand, they really haven't thought this through. On the other hand, I think they have. I think they have, Reverbo, and you know, they're at this point in time, they are so obsessed with getting the last few crumbs that we have that that's all that matters. And if the rest of us go to hell, that's fine. And the rank and file teabaggers will be presented with a Laurel and Hardy handshake and an American flag on a cheap little stick that was made in China, and they can wave it all the way to their graves. But there are things. I mean, there are no. Ron Paul. You know, I'm going to bring a basket of good old fashioned American Texas common sense and a course on Austrian economics. And I think it was along about that time that Agnes walked in back here and saw that I was watching it and went, "Oh, Bob, honestly."
I know we have to keep track of them, but I'll just have to. I'll have to get back into it some other time. It would have just been too painful. I couldn't. You just get stupider listening and watching these people. You know, the weird thing is though that they're pushing just regular people. I can't tell you anything about the D-baggers. They're gone. But they're pushing me into a corner. I mean, it's getting so polarized. I mean, you know, I'm pretty much was. you know, I kind of wanted to be a capitalist when I grew up. I kind of wanted to, you know, do what I can, do what I could to make a little money and, you know, and enjoy some of the finer things in life. And
home in the country, river of beer over your grandmother's paisley shawl? Yeah, I know.
No, I kind of made a good run at it, and I did okay before everything just completely unraveled. I didn't do too bad. But
and, of course, Ron Paul would say, well, that's freedom. That's liberty. You take your risks.
You take your risks. But, I mean,
you pays your money, you takes your chances, and if there's a break on the roulette wheel, well, you didn't know about it. Now, did you?
I guess I should have thought of that before, you know, before, like, I was born and stuff. But I might say, you know, in theory, I might have had a preference for, say, you know, I saw what unchecked corporatism can do, and I might have had a preference for, say, the social democracy models of Europe. I might have liked that sort of compassionate social model, you know, a little better. That didn't seem to, nobody's trying to tunnel their way out of any hell holes over there, I don't see. And nobody's, you know, going broke just because they get sick or have an accident. But the point is, it's sort of pushing everybody into a corner now. You're making this impossible. I mean, it's either the social model or the individual model, and you've got a gun to my head, and you're making me choose. And
well, and the thing is, if you choose the social model, they'll go ahead and pull the trigger of the gun.
And if I choose the individual model, I can't afford it. So I might as well put the gun to my own head. Wow. I got it worked out.
That's, you know, that's some catch, that catch 22.
It really is. And then when you start, you can bring this, it might take a more of a scholarly mind than mine in the history department, but are you now kind of returning to a sort of a structure that essentially created the conditions for things like, I don't know, the Russian Revolution?
Well, there's a reason that Sandra keeps referencing the really disturbing resemblance to the Weimar Republic. Because that came before the little guy with the chaplain mustache. And then the fun really started. Now, but see, the thing is, whatever happens to America will be uniquely American, and I'm not being a smartass in saying it. We're not going to do it like that. We'll do it worse. We'll do it, but we'll do it more patriotically while we're doing it worse.
Well, we'll do it exceptionally.
Americanly exceptionally.
That's right. But, I mean, are they thinking this time, man, they're really going to get it right? They'll just have us so impoverished, so, shall we say, well-chumped, that they'll be, that this time, their model, sorry, this time their model will last for a million years. We'll be just so, all we'll be doing is just eating Slim Jims in our mom's basement, watching football, and that'll just be the end of that. And we'll
drinking that free bubble up and eating that rainbow pie.
That's right, drinking the upper chem. You know what's fun to do? You can go on the internet and you can go look up sites where they talk about old soft drinks that you remember when you had when you were a kid.
Oh yeah.
Some of them are real regionally based. Some of them, like just in Maryland, I can remember having one called Almond Smash, which I found about a year ago, and it was basically undrinkable. But I guess we loved that. We were like 15. But I'm sure you could find some stuff. You grew up down Alabama way, didn't you?
Oh yeah. I had my RC Cola and my Moon Pie.
Oh man.
Played Maypole on the hill.
16 ounce RC and a half a rack of ribs. That's a feat.
That's good living. Yeah. No, I remember Upper Ten. I remember Kick. I remember Sunrise Orange and Sunrise Grape. Now, you know, you got to go way hard up east to get into stuff like Moxie.
I got a bottle of unopened Moxie.
I've never tasted the stuff. Maybe, I don't know, maybe next year, Netroots Nation, when we go up to Providence, if we go up to Providence, maybe I'll get to try some Moxie then. I don't know. But, no, you mentioned, you know, where these, oh, they're going to get it right this time. Look, it's not like this is not without warning, Reverbo. It was only a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, when when the Northeast was being absolutely and continues to be devastated by Hurricane Irene, that Ron Paul, declared that America would be better if we could go back to the America of 1900, the year that the Galveston hurricane killed upwards of 6,000 people.
And I guess the church just wasn't around to help those people? Is that
Well, you know, the church would have, but they were gone too.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Sandra just added to the discussion. Dr. Pepper with peanuts.
Appetizer.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be the Virginia peanuts. That, no red skins on that. Now, those are your skinned peanuts.
Okay.
Because the skins are kind of bitter.
Now, well, you're not talking about a can of beer nuts, are you?
No. These are the salty, no skins, cocktail peanuts. I think Planters calls them.
Oh yeah, just a little greasy, just for that. Yes, I know those are delicious.
Yeah, oh, in a ice cold bottle of Dr. Pepper, and you let them sit down there till the very end, and then you kind of got to work them out, and they're a little bit mushy. Oh, they're yummy.
You remember they still may make this. It was sort of it was like chocolate. It was called Yoo-Hoo.
Oh, it's still out there. Ferg absolutely will crawl across ground glass to bow before the bumper of the truck that delivers that garbage.
God, I'm going to have to get a bottle out and try it.
I think it's made with whey or something. You know, it's just one notch above being barely milk at all.
I'm hoping it gets a petroleum product. I mean, I think that's where they get the delicious blend.
That's like Velveeta. You know, anything that's supposedly cheese and can just sit out on your unrefrigerated shelf, that's got to be made from a petroleum byproduct. It just does.
I hope so. You know, it's sad that Bajent isn't around to see, you know, the spectacles like last.
No, but the book of essays that's coming out, I think it's going to be a little bit like the late great prophet Bill Hicks. It's going to be relevant, even if it's a couple of years old.
Hey, he's relevant like the best science fiction's relevant.
Right. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that I have played it recently, I would have once again played Bill Hicks on marketing. In regard to the ads that were running during the 9/11 memorial.
Yeah, I mean, there's some people that really have nailed this. The United States has just been one bizarre, like, ongoing commercial, one crazy, like, PR-induced facade or legend. I mean, by the way, you can read all of Bajent's essays on his website.
Yeah, joebajent.com.
And they are great. But, I mean, that's kind of...
What was it? A Million Little Feet? I still go back and read that every now and then. Where he talks about community and the fact that Americans are absolutely oblivious to the way that the rest of the world lives.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we kind of exist in like this mass hallucination. I mean, the Kool-Aid.
Well, it is a mass hallucination, or I don't know, a mass nightmare. And I'm sorry, I'm not just trying to beat a dead horse here, Reverbo, but I'm really not okay after last night and the previous pageant. It's a mass nightmare when a room full of people will cheer wildly at the idea of a 30-year-old man having the freedom to die in misery. Because, let me extend from that a minute, Reverbo. It wasn't just those people in the room. Because we know that they represent a statistical sampling of the people of the United States. 18-20% maybe. The same crowd that loves Jesus so much.
And how many of these people are, like, independently wealthy enough to afford state-of-the-art medical care if they get sick tomorrow? I would say none of them. So it becomes even more I mean, I can't even get my mind around any of this anymore. They've just, it's just madness. And how much longer are these people going to be duped? Well, I guess we know the answer to that.
That would be chumped.
Chumped. Well.
Well, chumped.
Be chumped. Be chumped. Oh boy. Here's something good, and then I will. I'll end with this. On October 28th, Johnny Depp is going to reprise his role as the good doctor Hunter Thompson.
Really?
Heard about this? Yes, in a movie called, based on with Thompson's novel called The Rum Diary.
Oh, that'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to that.
That was the thing that Thompson was working on before he became a real-life journalist.
Yeah, pretty much. I wasn't sure if it was real or not, and of course, what difference would it make? But then when I did a little research on it, I guess he really was. You can't get this. Only he would do something like this. He really was, for a brief time, a sports writer in San Juan for some sort of sports paper.
Yep.
For about a year. I mean, what, you know, only he could pull something like that off.
Well, he started out in Air Force Public Affairs.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, this is sort of based on characters that he ran into down there, and Johnny Depp, I would say that I would hope that it would. I'm considering it highly recommended if Depp has anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's a watcher. That's a watcher. Oh, and by the way, David in Tennessee, just with reference to that Galveston remark I made a minute ago.
Yeah.
It's in the records that folks in Galveston were waiting in the slightly higher surf and planning dinners for later in the day, 6 hours before the storm that killed 6,000 began to come in. David noting, Noah, we don't need no stinking Noah.
Oh, man.
But, you know, well, let me posit one thing just for your consideration and see what you think.
Okay.
And that is this. Ron Paul. I think the man actually would like to be president of the United States. I think there's some of those people on that stage who are running for vice president.
Okay.
But I think Ron Paul really would like that. You know, he doesn't want to be anybody's vice president. He's smarter than everybody else in the room because he's just that free. Is there any chance, do you think, that that little freak might be convinced to run a third-party candidacy?
Kind of a Perot attempt.
Yeah. Because I think he's got enough weird little followers to squirrel whoever gets the Republican nomination.
I could see him getting 20% of the vote. This is genius.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's Admiral Stockdale for vice president.
Why not? Is he still around?
Another math.
Because as you note in part 5 of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy, Admiral Stockdale was a little bemused by the fact that Ross picked him in the first place.
He was. Oh God. Yeah, I think you're onto something here. I think Paul is floating out a blimp to see if this just how many chumps he can get on the bandwagon.
And see, I got one more theory here, and it might be that I should not voice this, but I've made vague reference to it in the past, Reverbo, and that is John Huntsman. Okay, made the weird little reference to Kurt Cobain last night. No kidding. A Republican.
Good.
With a Kurt Cobain reference.
What was the reference?
It was something about no promises or false promises. What he was referencing was, I think, a Kurt Cobain song from the second album called All Promises. But he said, you know, it was a passing reference to Kurt Cobain.
Hmm.
And the polling data on John Huntsman last night, he actually scored a -1. Really.
Huh.
I don't know how you do that in public polling. among Republicans, of course.
Now, he's not a dummy either, is he?
No. And here's the fun part. What he actually is a construct. I'm convinced of this. A little bit of time travel real quick, but you're always up for some of that.
So he's been re-sleeved.
He has been re-sleeved, exactly. That's a reference to Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon, which I recommend that everyone read, just because it's a damn good book.
Put it on the Horn's fall book list.
Absolutely. Somebody tell Oprah. John Huntsman has been re-sleeved. Because, one, remember, John Huntsman was a member of the Obama administration. He never would have taken the job if he just despised Barack Obama. Right?
Right.
Okay. He's a former governor of Utah and was a governor of Utah during some pretty good times. So that gives him a job-creating record. He's a Mormon. Magic underwear, private planet, the works. He's also very, you know, he made a point of telling America last night that he's really hip because he's a Harley rider and he rides a dirt bike, and that's what he's going to bring to the White House with him.
Oh, no.
Okay, but work with me here. He's a construct. He's a plant.
What's his mission?
His mission is to blow up in the face of Mitt Romney. Willard Romney. Because after Rick Perry completely blows up, he'll do great in South Carolina and Iowa, but then the normal people start getting to vote.
Right, right.
And that's where Romney will get the momentum. And this is, well, and so time travel. You remember back in 2000 when the Republican National Committee gave gaggling googles of money to Ralph Nader to help keep him in the race in 2000?
No, but if you hypnotized me, I would remember that.
Right. Well, they did. And
I got to say this. Pol Pot would do really well in South Carolina, but go on.
Oh, I agree completely. The Nikki Haley. Well, Nikki Haley's a different story altogether. That little girl who wrote that story. In 2000, the Republican National Committee gave gagging amounts of money to Ralph Nader to make sure he stayed in the race, because they knew that the people who were going to vote for Ralph were not Republican voters. That he would, in fact, draw voters away from Al Gore. Well, flash forward 11 years. John Huntsman is in this field for the same or similar reasons. He's really normal. He's not just a lunatic. He talks about when the Republican Party becomes the party of anti-science, that they're pretty much toast. Which is, of course, what
you're not suggesting that there's a underground, there's some sort of hidden group of reasonable, moderate Republicans who are putting him up to this.
No, I'm submitting that the Obama administration has put him up to this.
Sweet.
I mean, you know, this is downright Romulan.
So none of the nuts would ever vote for him.
But some of the relatively normal ones will.
The Romney ones might.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, David in Tennessee, Pol Pot? That's Nikki Haley with an eye job and a very high quality wig. That and diction lessons. Diction lessons from Paula Deen. Jesus.
I like this theory. This is,
Well, and the way you can test its validity, Reverbo, is see how long. Now, if Huntsman just bails out day after tomorrow with that negative one of his, which David notes, that means all the Republicans that hated Huntsman hate him twice as much after the pageant. You know, nothing ever stopped a Republican from voting twice.
No.
No, if he bows out day after tomorrow, then we know I'm completely wrong. But if he stays in for the long haul, and if he's on every ballot to the bitter daggum end, that's some high stakes, dirty, down and dirty politics being played. And it's pretty admirable, really.
It's from the other team's playbook for sure.
And then, you know, if it all works out and Obama gets reelected, well, then guess what happens? John Huntsman gets a new job inside of the administration that isn't ambassador to China.
I
have to do this from time to time, Reverbo. I got to go two or three moves out on the chessboard.
I like this. You think that the man has a little more integrity than to agree to such a plan, but he may have on the other hand, loyalty sometimes will trump integrity, won't it?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, in regard to Admiral Stockdale, Sandra has an even better idea. Ron Paul and Craig T. Nelson, Freedom for All, 2012. She sent me earlier today the video of him on the Glenn Beck program from a couple of years back. It's a beautiful moment.
It is.
It is Craig T. Nelson talking to Glenn Beck and saying, and I quote, and I can't make this stuff up, Craig T. Nelson saying, what happened to society? I go into business, I don't make it. I go bankrupt. I've been on food stamps and welfare. Did anybody help me out? No. No.
Genius.
Craig T. Nelson, really and for true, said, I've been on food stamps and welfare. Did anybody help me out?
I want the government out of Medicare while we're at it. Oh, God, he's a genius. So they have, this has become very easy. There is nothing but a field full of total idiots and losers, with the exception of Willard. None of them have a prayer. And so we're just going to make sure.
Well, no, make no mistake. Rick Perry is going to bring that, but then again, Michelle Bachmann kind of peed in his punch bowl last night because she made it abundantly clear that he might sound like he's a fetus-loving, right-wing, freedom-worshipping, godly, you know, all of that. But she really did put the barb in and put it in the tender part with that business that made him up and say, you know, we up and do things down here. Made him up and say, and what a line it was. If you're suggesting that I can be bought for $5,000, I'm offended.
I wonder if these people know just how funny they are.
I didn't hear anybody laughing in the audience.
God. Well, this is gonna, I can't wait for this to all shake out. The third party. With Paul Nelson ticket, I can't wait to see what's his name again?
Huntsman.
I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Yeah, Huntsman dogging Romney to the bitter end. Because remember, it sort of slipped out of the Obama White House that their preference is to run against Romney. And when pressed for a reason, the unattributed source said, well, because he's just, well, he's weird. And Huntsman is just the guy to bring that out.
But Romney's got the scarlet letter. He's got the kiss. He's got the mark of, who's the Mormon leader? What's his name?
Smith.
He's got the mark of Smith on his forehead. He's not violent.
Well, you know, they had an illegal immigration question last night, and it got people, and again, after a while, Rick Perry began to look like the bull in the bull ring before the matador comes out and the picadors are just working him over, putting those little barbs in his flesh. and he'd beller a little bit, and the next thing you know, he'd be sprouting another barb. And one of those barbs was about immigration, and they're talking about the Dream Act, his amnesty and everything. And Willard Romney has to be a little bit quiet on that one, too. Because Willard has an illegal immigration problem.
Does he now?
Mm-hmm. Now, this requires just a little bit of history, Revervo. Back when Utah was playing footsie with the federal government about becoming a state, the federal government said, well, that's well and good, but if you want to become a state, you're going to have to get shed of that polygamy. And there were a whole bunch of Mormons in Utah and down into Arizona who said, oh, hell no, I'm a-keeping every one of my wives. And hot-footed it for Mexico and renounced their American citizenship and became Mexicans.
No.
One of those was Willard Romney's granddaddy.
Sweet.
Willard Romney's granddaddy brought his family, including Willard Romney's daddy, George, illegally across the border. Willard Romney's granddaddy and Willard Romney's daddy were both this is their word. I like to say undocumented immigrants, but but the right wing likes they were illegal aliens.
They were Mexican. They became Mexican citizens.
Yeah.
You're saying.
Yeah.
And then they came back into the United States illegally. They snuck back in.
Yep.
They snuck back in to make a fortune.
And did.
Well, how come we haven't heard about this all over the place? Well, because the Fox and everybody wants President Romney. That's why.
Well, they're desperate for somebody that it won't just be that Obama won't just tap dance over. Because no matter what these poll numbers say right now, Revervo, we all know that the silly season is upon us.
Yeah, he's got the unemployment problem, and he's got the stock market. All this was predictable. Everything's going to hell a year before the election. So he's got. I mean, if people think he doesn't have a battle on his hands, he has a bit of a battle. But look at who he's facing. Look at the field. There's a bunch of circus clowns out there, and Willard.
Yeah, and Jebby just sitting off in a corner somewhere, going, "Oh, should I? Should I? There's still a little time. Oh, I could. Oh, I don't. What would Mother think?"
If the American people elect another crazy person from Texas, it really is time to just start packing your bags and deciding where to move.
Yeah, and I don't know how to do that.
Well, I kind of gave up the idea as well. I mean, like my friend says, if we could relocate, to say, I don't know, Paris or Berlin or New Zealand, that would be great.
Yeah, but none of them want us.
Right, and it's also that kind of defeats the whole purpose of we're not stretching our dollar doing that.
No, the easy, quick answer is Costa Rica.
Well, or Belize or Mexico, and there's just too many. It turned out to just be too problematic.
Yeah.
But can you imagine that? Another nut job, oil man from Texas? I mean, I can't. The mind.
Yeah, and see, Romney will never be anybody's vice president.
No, I agree with you.
Rick Perry will never be anybody's vice president. So that means you've got to figure what? What kind of a ticket? Perry Bachman?
No one's going to pick her.
She's nuts.
Yeah, she's nuts.
So it's going to have to. Ooh, look. Perry Jindal.
Today he said he wouldn't do it.
Well, he endorsed Perry.
He did, but then he turned down the vice president, the presidential nominee. Even though he didn't get it yet.
Perry, wait. Perry Nikki Haley.
How about that nut from Florida? What's his name, Rubin or something?
Rick Scott?
Yeah, he said.
Oh, Marco Rubio?
Yeah, everybody's talking about, he's got some sort of,
mojo.
I don't think so.
All we can say is it's going to be it's damn fun to watch.
It is, and it's also kind of sad because what the legacy of all of this is I mean, you and I, the average lifespan of American men has actually, I believe, gone down.
Yes. Well, women. Well, and throughout the Southeast and you know, places where people talk with drawls and accents, women's life expectancy has gone down.
Well, Paul wants to turn the clock back to like when people only lived to be like 52 years old. That'll work out fine in his world.
Well, there'll be more jobs now, won't there? And we won't have any damn 99ers out whining around.
Whining. But I'm just, we're all just, we don't have time to waste. Just 5 decades have been lost. To me, Christ, 12 years have been lost now. Another 12 years are down the drain. 8 with George Jr. And then this crazy stuff the last 4 years, I don't know what. I mean, things aren't any better. Could have been.
No, and there are ways to make it better, but God forbid anybody should actually work on that. I mean, every time I think about, and I mentioned it the other night, Reverbo, every time I think about the upcoming Senate race in Nebraska, I get the dry heaves. Because that's going to be Senator Ben Nelson, incumbent, allegedly a Democrat, with a rodent on his head, versus the sitting Attorney General of the state of Nebraska who refers to welfare recipients as coons.
Well, isn't that impressive?
Now, it's going to be like that because, you know, there's plenty to go around. It's going to be like that because there is no effective progressive or liberal or whatever you want to call it messaging inside the state of Nebraska, because the Democratic National Committee is not interested in messaging inside the state of Nebraska. Now, will Progressive Democrats of America go out to Nebraska? I don't know. Will Democracy for America that tends to get behind progressive candidates, will they get busy in Nebraska? Do they have the nerve to target, I hate that word,
yeah,
a sitting incumbent Democrat in a primary process? I don't know.
Well, you got to start going after these people if you're going to change the party. I mean,
because you know what? 6 more years of Ben Nelson does not advance the Democratic agenda in the United States Senate. Anybody who thinks it does wasn't paying attention during the Employee Free Choice Act debate. Everybody who says, well, you know, we had the House and the Senate and the President, we didn't do any damn thing. Well, you know what? Nancy Pelosi and her majority in the House got the Employee Free Choice Act lickety-split right through. Done. And it went to the Senate, and Ben Nelson and Mary Landrieu and Blanche Lincoln killed it.
You remember about 2 years ago or so, somebody murdered a couple of went into like the Democratic state Democratic headquarters
in Arkansas.
It was Arkansas?
Yes.
Okay, I was just trying to. It was not Nebraska.
No.
That was Arkansas.
And then, but there is an Arkansas story to be told, and it's worth remembering. Because it tells a little about what might happen in Nebraska, or more aptly, what might not happen, Reverbo. Disgusted Democrats stood up on their hind legs and backed a challenger to Blanche Lincoln. And they beat her ass in the primary. Labor went all in for her challenger. Because, among other things, you know, he said he would support the Employee Free Choice Act. Rahm Emanuel said they were the organized labor was, and I quote, retarded for doing that. So they beat her in the primary, And then they had to have a runoff, and she beat the other guy. She got a second bite of the apple, and she won the second time and got her ass handed to her by a teabagger. So if nothing else, you know, we're looking. You know, this is at the very. I'm not trying to be, you know, make anybody just, you know, all is lost, but you know, this is the reality. This is the totality of the circumstances.
We don't have any more time to. People just think that all. I mean, decades go by and nothing, and things just sort of get more and more and more. I hate. I mean, I'm not a doomer because I already think it had started to circle the drain 30 years ago. I just don't think people are just in denial about this.
Well, but if it's ever going to turn around, you have to stop. You have to put the stopper in the damn drain somewhere.
Yeah, and everybody.
I think that's what we're talking about here. You know, if you're
popular, I'm going to say the popular thing to do for a president who went term number two is to, you know, I got nothing to lose now. Now I'll try to push my agenda forward. Well, what the hell were you doing the first 4 years?
Trying to get reelected.
I'm not getting any more attractive here.
Yeah, but the thing is, American history is replete, Reverbo, with second-term presidencies that just don't add up to much. That just don't amount to anything. Reagan's didn't.
Fine. Now that's 8 years of a guy with
right.
huge potential. Oh, man. Well, if you want me, I will be up at the Ice Palace in Montreal.
You know what? Save me a little space.
I think that wasn't a W.C. Fields line?
I believe so.
excellent conversation tonight. I'm glad I found you behind the microphone.
Well, you know, that's how it is with this on-again, off-again radio show that I've only been doing for, you know, a lot of years.
Yeah, I mean, you are just... You're just a lazy shit. I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but...
I'm going to have a talk with Ferg about these damned ankle sprains and I don't know, maybe get a little brusque with Margie about these about letting her gallbladder go bad and stuff.
I think you just have to start making it personal, right?
I'm trying actually not to in this case. I don't like to just go off on listeners.
All right. Well, I will catch you on the flip flop, as they say.
All righty.
So, go get a bottle of Yoo-Hoo.
Or maybe an upper 10.
An upper 10. Okay, man. All right.
Make it personal, Reverbo.
You too.
Bye. Op-ed correspondent Reverbo, who will not self-promote to save his life. Go forth and read. And you know what? It's now that it's all done, it is worth your effort to just read the entire Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy series. All five installments. They're there at headonradionetwork.com. This is nothing short of brilliant satire, gorgeous writing, and if you don't belly laugh a little bit here and there along the way, well, I can't help you. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. An email from our pal Andy out in California with regard to Mark's email. And he says, Mr. Bob, your email from Mark in Japan seems way, way over the top. Mark, let's be reasonable. Bob has been milquetoast. Okay, I'm going to let that one slide, Andy. Bob has been milquetoast compared to what you'd get from me for 3 hours about President Obama. I think Bob bends over backwards and forwards for President Not Sure, giving the President plenty of slack. Remember, President Not Sure did have majorities in the House and Senate and did very little. His mantra was to grasp onto Republican policies and talking points from the word go, not pushing the ideals of FDR or the disreputable cantankerous progressives. No, I think Bob's been very complimentary and supportive of the president, even though I don't believe he deserves it. Hey, Mark, Chicago school, baby. Chicago school, as Bob has surmised, Mr. Obama is being the leader he wants to be. No FDR Democrat would ever propose a 50% cut to the Social Security payroll tax from 12.4% to 6.2%. 3.1% employer side, 3.1% employee side, no matter how bad the economy. Once the Republicans get their Social Security payroll tax cut, Grover Norquist will make sure it never gets resurrected. The Republicans and third-way Democrats are on the path to privatize Social Security or scale it back, just like the administration is doing to the EPA with the ozone clean air standards, bringing us back to the smog-filled 1960s. There's a lot of truth in what he... I can't pretend that Obama is somebody that he's not. But I will sit here and tell you straight up, you know, and I get shit for this, that I know what I'm going to do in November 2012, because I'm going to be handed the same old crap sandwich that you get every presidential election. A mainstream candidate A or a mainstream candidate B, in which case, and in one instance, the mainstream isn't really, it's made up of lunatics. Andy adding, concerning Senator Ben Nelson, if you tried to remove Ben Nelson, Warren Buffett's insurance guy in the Senate of Nebraska, the third wave or DLC Democrats will come to his rescue. Yeah, that's the reality. Mr. Obama would also come to Senator Ben Nelson's aid, too. Because if one incumbent falls, the proletariat might get the idea everyone is vulnerable to a challenge. And we can't have that. No, indeedy. President, not sure, likes his job. Thanks, Andy. By the way, did you see the story the other day about this, this creep? Oh, God. What is his name? It'll only take me a second. He has introduced a bill in the House of Representatives that would defund an environmental justice internship at the EPA. See, environmental justice is what they call it when dumbass hillbillies like me have the guts to stand up, and God, so many more who have so much more guts, have the nerve to stand up against multi-billion-dollar poisonous, murderous industries like coal and demand that we stop being poisoned. They call it environmental justice. And over at EPA, they've got this little itsy bitsy little fellowship internship thing. And Mike Pompeo, who is a Republican from Kansas, and who is a sock puppet for Koch Industries, he is their number one guy. Has introduced H.R. 2876 to kill the Environmental Justice Eco Ambassador Program. It's an internship program, as I noted, that goes to graduate students and deals with the connections between economic disparities, discrimination, and environmental health. In other words, deals with the fact that they don't put coal ash dumps or coal-fired power plants or mountaintop removal operations next to, oh, I don't know, Senator Jay Rockefeller's house, and instead put them next to mine. Or Vernon's. Or Bo's. Or Debbie's. Or Junior's. All the people who live in the Central Appalachian Sacrifice Zone. My pal Mickey McCoy. Hey, everybody, by the way, look up Metro Billy, M-E-T-R-O, B-I-L-L-Y on Facebook, and just go like it. It'll tickle Mickey senseless. He's just set up a little sandwich shop there in Inez, Kentucky, and he calls it Metro Billy. But anyway, Mike Pompeo said, at a time when millions of Americans cannot find work and are saddled with record deficits and crippling environmental regulations, spending $6,000, that's what the graduate student gets, $6,000. Ooh, jeebus, don't spend it all in one place, pal. spending $6,000 of taxpayer money per student to act as tools of this administration's radical policies is clearly not acceptable, nor is it ever the role of the federal government to indoctrinate. Here's what it means to be a radical. This is the application requirement. Applicants must have previously been involved and or have a strong interest in environmental justice, social justice issues, and or environmental health disparities in an academic, volunteer, and or employment setting. See, that's what I mean. They're deliberately creating spots inside the EPA for them little nasty tree-hugging hippies to come in and pollute our capitalist godly way of lives. The legislation would also forbid the Environmental Protection Agency from spending a single penny on student, quote, programs related to the study of greenhouse gas emissions. See, if we all just don't study it, it'll go away. Just ignore it. Ignore it. No, don't believe your bleeding lungs. Just ignore it, and it'll go away, and the economy will recover, and we'll all be up to our eyeballs in Frisbees and Wheat Checks. Co-sponsors on the bill thus far are Marsha Blackburn, Repiglican from Tennessee, John Carter, Repiglican from Texas, Greg Harper, Repiglican from Mississippi, and David McKinley, Repiglican from West Virginia. Hot diggity damn! Because David McKinley would rather see us dead than his masters in the coal industry even remotely inconvenienced. Yeah. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark calling you.
Hey, Mark, what's happening, man?
Not much, brother. I thought you might appreciate here at Crystal River, there's a number of coal plants that are running, and I'm not a real stickler about the appearance of my truck, but I keep it pretty squared away. And one of the gentlemen I've worked with, Bob, has been out here for about 20 years, off and on. He said, just take a towel and wipe the inside of your roof with that towel, with your windows up, and see what you pick up there. And
Did you?
I did. And I keep these hotel towels with me. In any case, they're black, Bob, and I've got a wheeze in my chest right now. I'm not Bruce Jenner, but I've ran many miles, Bob, in the Marines. We put a lot of miles on our feet, our legs, and I've got a wheeze in my chest, and I notice when I get out of this area for just a few days, it seems to go away. When I come back, it picks up again. So, there's a young girl that works with us, the same craft, and we've raised some money for a couple children that live technically south of us that are dying of cancers that I think they're related probably to the mercury, would be my guess as a layman. And I said something to her. She's a girl that actually went to college for a little bit, and she's got four children herself. In any case, I made a comment I shared with you that I talked to my coworkers when it's appropriate, and I said, well, you know, isn't it sad we keep raising money for these children, that they all live in the direction of which that pollution is headed, and you think that might be what's causing the cancer in these children? And I pointed at the smokestack. We have scrubbers there, which the company was so sadistic, they let it get to the very end of their federal imposition fines, and then I wasn't here in town, but from what my coworkers tell me, they kind of let it get over the edge to where it got so bad that the federal government actually had to help sponsor the building of it, you know. And then of course they brought in, Republicans do, they brought in a bunch of illegal aliens to build it, and then actually the union had to come in and bail it out. It's a pretty substantial scrubber, but still,
a scrubber is designed to pull mercury out But even with that on, even with the most so-called modern coal-fired power plant, Mark, it's still pumping tons, literally tons, of particulate matter into the air, and it goes, and it's stuff that goes far beyond mercury.
I'll talk to some of my coworkers, and in a conversation will pop up, and I said, "Well, do you know how they measure pollution?" It was astounding to me, Bob. And I said, "They measure it by the ton," and people don't consider that. They want you scared of some son of a bitch in a cave that we put there and financed, but they don't want you scared of the realities. The last night on Rachel Maddow, Bob, she had one of the only Arab speakers from the FBI who I think resigned recently. I think he worked under John O'Neill. A book was written about O'Neill, the senior counterterrorism agent whose office is in New York City. He had asked for, I think, 15 more agents, $30 million more dollars under the Bush administration. He had tracked down. He'd been an FBI counterterrorism person for about 30 years. It's all he wanted to do, even as a young kid, and went to college, Catholic studies. I mean, it's a person that had some integrity. That's what he wanted to do, and he did it. He tracks down the coal bombers, asked for the increase in agents and money for his office in New York. Bush administration's going to turn him down, so he realizes that. Like any bureaucracy, he leaves not waiting for the letter. The letter shows up. He's already hired for the civilian position for the World Trade Center. I just got off the Internet this morning after watching Rachel last night. Just took a quick read and said his salary, which to many of us, $100,000 is a lot of money, but it went to $350,000 at the World Trade Center. His first day on the job, Bob, was September 10th. 2001. He was killed the next day trying to save folks. The this agent last night from the FBI had worked under O'Neill, and they'd gone to Yemen, and they had dealt with some people there. And what he says in the show last night, he said, "I'm not a conspiracy person, but there were people in the agency that know and knew and still know today." And he said that he said the folks that they dealt with said, "Well, we told your contemporaries over a year ago who these people were and what they were going to do." Then I look on the Internet under John O'Neill, and it talks about a friend of his that's a veterinarian woman. And before O'Neill dies, he's talking to her about airplanes into the World Trade Center. And they kill a niece of hers or something to kind of shut her up. She kind of went on the run. But it's a real story to make a... unfortunate. Any case, I just haven't trusted it, and I combine, you know, the building. I watched the engineers, the Japanese American and an American engineer, whatever you call it. In any case, they designed the building that if it were had issues, that if it had to come down, it would come down in the fashion that it did. That I understand, but and then people see the squibs and they're, "Oh, there's the squib," and then the white boss. Like phosphorus, and you know, of course, fuel doesn't burn hot enough to melt steel. But I'm not a, even though I have a kind of an engineering type mind as far as leverage, fulcrum points, and the basic common sense like that, I don't have an engineer's ability to crunch numbers. But I have that intuition to take their knowledge and facts and make them the reality on the job that I can do with the help of my friends and brothers that I work with. But I look at things. In addition to that, Bob, as I also look at the fact that Cantor Fitzgerald's number one client on the 119th floor was none other than the 18 and a half minutes of missing Watergate tapes we haven't lived, none other than the Enron Corporation, created by Ken Lay, who was in naval accounting at the Pentagon, worked for Dick Cheney back in the late 80s, put in Texas intentionally to buy and sell deregulated electricity. So
Well, I'm the first one, Mark, who will say that there are more questions than answers out of all of it.
I know you do, Bob.
You know, the way that Richard, I was cleaning out a vehicle. It's an old vehicle that was never going to be fixed. And we had it hauled off to the salvage yard for scrap. And I was cleaning it out, and I found a book that my father had sent me. And it was Richard Clark's Against All Enemies. And I picked it up and I reread it. And there are horrifying lapses of judgment. There are acts within the Bush administration that reek of gross negligence rising to the level of willful, wanton, and reckless. The presidential daily briefing of August the 6th, 2001, comes to mind. Bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S. I'm on vacation, Condi. Give it to somebody else. I'm on vacation. I'm going to go cut some brush.
I'm going to be Ronald Reagan Jr.
Yeah, except I'm scared of the horses.
I really don't like being in this brush over here yonder.
And when they asked Condi about it, you know, you remember when they went to the Genoa G8 summit and they had to move everybody into ships out off the coast because they had received credible intelligence that terrorists were going to use hijacked planes as missiles. And I mean, that was there for everybody to see. And for Condoleezza Rice to come along and say, well, no one had any idea that they'd ever use planes as missiles. It doesn't fit.
Is your dad still alive, Bob?
No, he's gone more than 4 years now.
Your dad had bought that book because he didn't trust something. He wanted to check something out.
Yeah, it stunk to him, and he bought me another book, and it's something that might appeal to you. I wish I could give you the title, Mark. But it's a brilliantly well-written book that chronicles the senior year of a class of West Point cadets, and it's just a straightforward chronicle. But there,
Sense of Honor by James Webb.
I don't think so.
No, it was West Point. That's Naval Academy. I apologize.
Yeah. This is West Point. But that senior year just happens to be from the fall of 2000 to the spring of 2001.
Oh, okay. Wow.
With a publication date after September the 11th. And it's one of those things that I read and just went, and never heard any, you know, but I do this. There are things that make me go, that everybody else says, well, you know, that's just how it is, Bob. You're just weird. Like me objecting to the commercials in the middle of the 9/11 memorial on ABC. But anyway, there's a passage in there. The person who gave Mark the commencement address at West Point on June 9th, 2001, was Assistant Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz. And in the transcript of that address, you will find where he says, and remember, you know, this is one of those Project for a New American Century creeps.
I don't believe it.
And he says, class of 2001 here at the United States Military Academy, I can't tell you what it's going to be, but there are some surprises coming. And all I can tell you is be ready for them.
Hey, Bob, is that the Paul Wolfowitz that carries an Israeli passport in addition to an American passport?
Yeah, and licks his comb before he combs his hair, that guy.
The guy that was dating the black secretary that he had to fire after he hooked her up. You know, from what I read, is everywhere that the 9/11 terrorists were, there were Mossad agents. And then there's also footage of, and of course I've read some literature concerning the same group of people, probably on their, probably like the Rangers. When the Rangers, you know, when the Special Forces or the SEALs show up, you've got probably a battalion of Rangers floating around in the area. Kind of your grunts backing up the special operators. Well, anyway, the guys backing up the Mossad in Broward County, they said there was about 200 to 300 men from Israel in their 30s to 40s studying art from all over the United States, and that right after 9/11, most of them went home. So I don't trust, and I think it would take that severe degree of racism to pull off an operation like that. I don't think you hear a lot of folks say big government. It's being done by something or someone, but Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Elliot Abrams, there's something not right there.
I think it's Mike Malloy who has observed this on a number of occasions. Wherever Elliot Abrams shows up, People die. He's just an angel of death.
John Negroponte, Douglas Fight.
Yeah, they're all that way.
That's correct.
But you know, we can't prosecute war criminals because we've got to look forward and not back. You know, one little factoid tidbit, and it's an important one. Talking about what didn't happen on September the 11th, 2001. I defer to people who have far greater mathematical knowledge than I do. Because, you know, we've heard me try to do math on the fly on the air, and it, you know, it quite often doesn't work out well. But among other people, one of the most intelligent human beings I know is Ben Birch over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Mm-hmm. Now, Ben has the kind of knowledge you need to be able to talk to individual atoms one-on-one, you know, and know them by name, not like hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. No, Ben knows atoms like, you know, Frank and George and Bill, okay? I mean, he's just friendly with them. He knows how they behave. And a long time ago, Ben sat me down, and it was sort of like having Albert Einstein explain physics to a kindergartner. But explained to me that, no, it was not a controlled demolition. And David in Tennessee, who also has some engineering background, just said one simple civil engineering fact. Steel does not need to burn to fail. At 40% of its melting point, steel loses 75% of its ability to bear load. That happened at like the 80th floor 2 hours after impact. When the top 20-plus floors were unleashed, the power could not be resisted by the remaining structure. A mass sitting on top of some structure is static. That mass falling even the 12 feet of one floor is oh so dynamic. Think of the most powerful battering ram ever. And the thing that always grabs me with 9/11, Mark, is that I think we do a disservice to the actual criminal negligence.
That's right.
That the Bush administration clearly engaged in.
That's a fact.
When we try to advance their criminality to a level of intentional acts as opposed to what would you call it, intentional negligence?
Well, even negligence is prosecutable, you know.
Absolutely.
You're corporal of the guard. You might be a 19-year-old Marine. You might be the corporal of the guard for a shift of Marines at a battalion headquarters. You might be on a ship. You may be out in the field. You may be sergeant of the guard, his co-worker and co-boss. You all sign in a log. You may be officer of the day. You may be a 23-year-old lieutenant from the Naval Academy as a Marine officer. And everybody responds to the officer of the guard. And the officer of the guard represents the battalion commanding officer or the
absolutely
commanding officer. And so for all of the G.I. Joe right wingers like Rick Barry with his pretty hair that didn't go to Vietnam either, who wears this little faggot metal symbol on his chest I'm looking at right now, like LBJ did, awarding himself his own medal, so he can appear to be the you know, people think wearing a uniform is kind of like wearing, you know, being in high school football. You might get your ankle twisted or something. It's very dangerous. Be careful out there. We're going to win, team. But the negligence, if something happens when you're the corporal of the guard, sergeant of the guard, officer of the day, if a Marine hangs himself in a barracks, if a long-distance phone call is made, if classified information turns up missing, if there's a rape conducted, if there's a building blown up in Beirut, it's your ass. And actually, the commanding officer for the Marines in Beirut resigns from the Marine Corps shortly thereafter, and he blew up. He went from about 190 pounds from he was super jump qualled, scuba he was scuba qualled. He was competing with Oliver North to maybe make it common out of the Marine Corps. They were both up in rising stars in the Marine history, both young lieutenant colonels, and they gave Ollie North the CIA role with the Iran-Contra, and they gave Garrity from the Marines in Beirut to the Beirut Marines, the 22nd MAL is what it was called. And I saw Garrity in North Carolina in 87 or 86 before I went to Hawaii. And my friend that I grew up with, Bob, his name's on there. And there's probably some other Marines I know that are dead on that wall. But in the glorious, very patriotic Ronald Reagan with the pretty hair, who was really tough on the union labor after he was in the fucking union for 40 years. Union buster Ronald Reagan, the draft dodger that he is, I'll show you how tough we right wingers are. We're going to leave Beirut after we get our ass blown up. But, Garrity blew up Bob to Jesus Christ. I mean, he was, twice the size, very heavy. I said, are you sure that's him? I mean, he went from a svelte, he looked like a professional boxer. I used to watch him on CNN. I said, that's a bad little son of a bitch. And then I seen him in person. The guy looked like he looked like he'd been bowling his whole life. It just almost destroyed him. And this is what happens after World War II with some of our naval officers who survive when their ships go down or whatever. They came home and they took their lives, or they just self-destructed, or they killed themselves some other way. Because of the guilt, because of the responsibility that they neglected. And
you know what, Mark? The proof that the people, the real monsters out of all this, that they are conscienceless bastards, lies in the fact that that hasn't happened to them. You know, there was Rumsfeld out there the other day throwing a little piss fit over right. something Paul Krugman wrote. Well, that evil old bastard's just as skinny as a damn rail.
Right, exactly. He looks... That little son of a bitch doesn't look any older than he looked in 1977 when he was Secretary of Defense the first time, right before they put Saddam Hussein in power then. And then when he was again, when they let the Pentagon get hit, he just looks the same for the last, 50 years, and he works for Alcoa. He's basically one of the,
evil is a preservative, Mark.
Oh, he's a hateful, and he's from Illinois. He's an arrogant, that's an arrogant Yankee, brother. And I may not be a native Southerner, but, I have fought against arrogance my whole life. Bob, I proficiency to tennis and golf until I heard you earlier tonight talking about I can watch golf too. And I asked my daughter in the late 80s or early 90s. It must have been in the early 90s. She said, Dad, what do you want for Father's Day or birthday or whatever? And I said, Caitlin, I said, I'd like one of those Nike hats, the one like that Tiger Woods wears. And I wore that hat out, Bob. One of the first places I worked was at Plant Vogel. And, of course, that's where, the Masters is. And I was so proud. And, I never got any negative comments about it. A lot of the guys I work with are pretty progressive minded. They're very good people. And some of the strongest union people are Southern union people. They're strong believers in whatever in the hell they believe in. And, but they're good hearted people. And, I'm proud to have grown up in the Midwest. But I'm definitely a Jimmy Carter, John Edwards Democrat. I'm an FDR Democrat. I'm a TVA Democrat. Even though the dumbasses from Alabama are probably right wingers now. But I don't know.
You share my grief. I understand, Mark.
Yeah.
Hey, let me just say one thing, because I'm going to get email, and this is not a call down. I love you like a brother. let's refer henceforward to Rick Perry's candy ass medal. Could we do that?
Oh, yes, candy ass metal. Is that what we're calling it then? Candy ass metal? Did I use foul language or something?
Well, you used a sort of gender insensitive word.
Oh, yeah. I'm still rough around the edges, and I apologize.
I know, and I'm not calling you down. I'm just saying, for the sake of not being hurtful to other members of the Horn family.
Yes, and I love everybody.
I know. So, hey, Mark, I gotta go, brother. It's time for Rick Smith.
God bless you, and I stand shoulder to shoulder with you, Bob.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Mark calling from Florida. Time to get out of here. Rick Smith is on the way. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go learn about the Coal River Wind Project. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Okay! Don't care! show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well, howdy!
If you're new to this, well, stick around. I think you're going to find it habit-forming. This is conversation radio unlike any other. And I hope you will find it as scintillating as so many do. It's the middle of the week. Yes, indeedy. It's Wednesday. Oh, you know. And I've got a, we'll deal with the rest of it here in a minute, but I do have a program note for you. Part of that whole walk the walk, talk the talk thing that I've been going on about for a while, and I don't say that to aggrandize myself. I hope you don't understand. I hope you understand that. I simply say that so that you'll so that you will know that I'm not just, you know, going walkabout. But I've got some walk the walk, talk the talk stuff next week, and I will be away from the microphone Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week. We'll have a more-in Monday, and that's about it. I apologize, but it's got to be done. It simply has to be done for a variety of reasons. Jesus, just last night's final gubernatorial debate, we've got a governor's election for about a nine-month stint in the governor's office coming up here because Joe Manchin sort of screwed the pooch when his overarching ambitions drove him to chase the seats vacated by Robert C. Byrd. So we've had this series of ongoing elections without end. But at any rate, I'll be gone next week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'll be on the road and going to do some learning, some training.